Our second case this morning is 2018-1243 and 2018-1315, the State of Ohio versus Robert Taylor. For the appellant, Ms. Hutnick.
Thank you, Your Honor. Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. In this case, the trial court imposed $130 in court-appointed counsel fees at sentencing. Robert Taylor appealed, stating that the trial court failed to consider his present and future ability to pay. The second district then held that prior to imposing court-appointed counsel fees, the trial court must consider the defendant's ability to pay, make an explicit finding that the defendant has the ability to pay, and then also inform the defendant of the amount at sentencing. The issue that this court is faced with now is whether or not the statute requires the trial court make an explicit affirmative finding on the record that a defendant has the ability to pay some or all of the costs of their legal representation.
And where does the statute say that?
That is the issue, Your Honor. The state's position is that it does not. It does not explicitly state that. It's nowhere in the statute.
Do you agree that there should be a hearing?
A hearing to
determine? On ability to pay.
No, Your Honor. The statute also does not require a hearing to determine the defendant's ability to pay. It just requires that the trial court consider his ability to pay.
Does the statute say consider or determine?
Determine. But in order to determine, one must also consider.
How can the reviewing court then evaluate whether the trial court has complied?
The record should support the consideration. And well, if the record does not, then the trial court has abused its discretion.
So you're saying the trial court can make the determination, not point to anything or not say anything, then the reviewing court, the appellate court, would then have to go back. So if the trial court said nothing, then what does the Court of Appeals do to review?
So if the trial court has imposed court-appointed counsel fees, right, but says nothing else?
Correct.
If the record supports such a finding, in this instance, the pre-sentencing investigation report indicated that the defendant's health, his work history, his education, and any kind of income he had at that time, the trial court did mention that it had considered the PSI. So in this instance, the record does support such.
What would a judge take into consideration to determine ability to pay?
Just like for present and future ability to pay requirements, anything from age, the sentence received, if they're in prison or if they're out on community control, like in this case, work history, any kind of benefits received, any kind of financial information, their education level, anything that would support whether or not this individual would be able to pay any.
What about expenses and obligations and needs?
Of the defendant himself, just living expenses?
Yes.
That would certainly be.
Was that in the PSI?
Well, it would include where he lived.
And the amount he pays for rent and what it costs to feed him and medical expenses and transportation and any dependents or obligations there. Was any of that in the PSI?
I believe the PSI does include if there are independents. I don't recall if.
Does it include whether he's responsible financially for those dependents?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it does.
And how's the judge going to weigh what he's got coming in against what he has going out and whether he is able to meet those needs and then have extra to pay the court-imposed fines or fees?
Well, that would be an issue of whether or not the record does support. That would be an issue of whether the record supports the determination.
Well, did the record support it here?
Yes, and the Second District actually decided in dicta that it would, in fact, support such a determination in this case.
Because they took into consideration all the things I just listed?
Well, took into consideration enough to make the determination.
And what's enough?
In this instance, it was his work history, his education level, the fact that he's out on community control, his age, his health, the benefits
he's
he receives.
He's on disability, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And was that temporary?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, no.
It was permanent?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So work history has nothing to do with it?
Well, at the beginning of this case, the defendant was employed. He did apply for a reduction in bond based upon the fact that he was employed and living with his fiance. So he is employable. We know that. He had a job at the beginning of this case. It's just at sentencing, he no longer had that job because he was in prison. That doesn't mean he's unemployable. In fact, it actually supports that he is employable, despite the fact that he is on disability.
I thought you said it was permanent disability.
Well, it is permanent disability given, I believe he had an accident. So it is permanent disability, but...
But he's employable.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So, Counselor, the statute doesn't say how to make the determination, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So why did the Court of Appeals exceed its authority by saying how to do so?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. It's not clear in their opinion why court-appointed counsel fees are supposed to be treated differently than any other determination at sentencing.
I mean, similar to what this court said in State versus Bonnell about findings on the record for consecutive sentences, if the statute doesn't explicitly say how the determination should happen, why can't the court set forth how the determination should happen?
Well, I think there's a difference between setting forth how the determination is made and requiring an explicit finding. A finding is a legal finding that has to be made on the record. A determination is something that the court can make on their own without having a hearing, that it must be supported by the record, but it need not be made explicitly. It's not an explicit finding.
So you're saying the Court of Appeals said that the trial court had to make a finding and the statute doesn't require it. The Court of Appeals didn't say how to show a determination.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in order to create a record to support that they've made a determination, they are requiring an explicit finding. But the statute does not require an explicit finding be made on the record. They are adding that language in. It merely requires a determination be made.
But if the trial court has said, I've reviewed the PSI and I find that you have the future ability to pay this fine, which is what I think the Court of Appeals is saying should have been said, is that correct?
I believe the Court of Appeals is requiring the trial courts to say that I find that you have the ability to pay and are reasonably expected to pay $130. That is nowhere in the statute.
Well, what about just I find that you have the future ability to pay?
That is what the appellate court is requiring, yes.
And that exceeds the court's authority?
Yes, Your Honor. It merely needs...
Because the statute is silent, correct?
Yes, the statute is silent. The statute does not require... It requires a determination. It is not silent on that part. There has to be a determination made. Otherwise, you can't impose court-appointed counsel fees. Once a determination is made, that's all that's required. The trial court need not make an explicit finding that says, I've considered XYZ, you now have, and I find that you have the ability to pay. That is a finding and not a determination.
But counsel, doesn't the statute require a determination to make a determination whether the defendant can pay all or part of, right? All or part of the assessment? How can they do that without having an inquiry on the record and make that determination whether to sever some of the cost?
The court is certainly able to make an inquiry, but it's not required as long as they have enough information to support the determination.
Wouldn't it be better for reviewing courts to be assured that the determination was made if the trial court judge actually said that on the record and made that finding?
It would add to the record, Your Honor, but it is not required. Just like in any sort of financial sanction, we allow the trial court some leeway in not having to say specific words or talismanic phrases to support their findings as long as the record supports that finding. We don't require the courts to say, I find that you have the president's future ability to pay $2,000 in any sort of sanction. They just say, as long as the record supports such a finding and that the record supports that the trial court made the proper considerations. Of course, more information in the record is always welcome. It's not to say you can't say those things. However, the statute doesn't require you to say those things. And if we are allowing the record to support consideration in other aspects of sentencing and other fees and fines and sanctions, what makes counsel fees so special that we're now changing the rules for them?
Defense counsel was present, I guess, at sentencing. Was there any objection made?
No, Your Honor, there was no objection.
So did the court below review for plain error?
No, Your Honor, did not.
Why wouldn't plain error review apply when there's no objection made? Is there any reason it shouldn't have been reviewed for plain error?
It definitely could have been reviewed for plain error, Your Honor. I can't answer why the appellate court did not make that determination. Yes, Your Honor, I'm not sure why they did not consider it for plain error, but I think that is a possibility. Unless there are any other further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lachman.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. I'm Marshall Lachman, and I am here on behalf of Robert Taylor.
Maybe before you get started, maybe you can answer the question I asked opposing counsel. Any reason why the appellate court shouldn't have reviewed this for plain error?
Well, I would assert, Your Honor, that the court did. You're right. It did not specifically say, you are correct, that it was not objected to below. But I believe compliance with the statute,
but
that the analysis.
If the court reviewed it for plain error, then the obligation would have been on the defendant to show that the result would have been different had the court made the findings. I'm not sure the record could support that, could it?
There is question as to, with the issue of disability, with the issue of the nature of these costs being attorney's fees, I think, first of all, I don't think it's as clear-cut as
kind of the point of plain error, though, if it's not clear-cut, if you can't demonstrate prejudice from the record, then the defendant.
But I would also argue if there's a violation of a statute, if there is a finding that a statute requires an affirmative or an explicit finding and that is not done, regardless of whether, if a statute is violated, that amounts to an analysis that any court can look at to determine whether or not the sentence in this case of a court was proper.
But we don't say that plain error doesn't apply simply because a statute might have been violated, particularly when there's nothing explicit in the statute that says that.
But I would
argue, all kinds of times we apply plain error when a statute has been violated by a lower court, right?
But I would argue that in the analysis, even in a plain error analysis, you look at whether or not the trial court complied with its requirements under a statute.
Counsel, let's talk about that. What requirement under the statute wasn't met?
And I think that's an important point here, and I want to.
That's why I'm asking about it.
Yes. The imposition of all or part of counsel fees is different than the imposition of, say, any other kind of financial sanction, be it court costs, be it restitution, be it fines. The statute is very clear, and I think if we just take the part of the statute that says if the person represented may be expected to have the means to meet some part of the cost of the services the person shall pay, that ignores the first part of the statute, which indicates that the expenses approved by the court under this section shall not be taxed as cost and shall be paid by the county. The presumption under 294151 is that, unlike, there is no presumption that restitution is paid by the county, there is no presumption that court costs are paid by the county, but in this section pertaining to attorney's fees for indigent, and this, you know, Gideon versus Wainwright, you know, we get into, and we're not arguing the constitutionality of this statute here, but this is distinction. There is a distinction here that the starting point is the costs shall be paid by the county. Now, the statute does provide a provision whereby all or part of that cost could be paid by someone who has a reasonable expectation to be able to pay it. So I think in answer to your question, Your Honor, that we are not looking, we cannot look at that provision in a vacuum, that we have to, that there's a presumption that has to be overcome. And the question before this court today is how should a trial court overcome that presumption? The Second District held that there should be an explicit or an affirmative finding on the record.
And where in the statute is that required?
It's not. It's not stated. But the statute doesn't say that it's enough to say I've considered the PSI. That there is more that needs to be. It is not unreasonable for the Second District to have held that there needs to be more than a vague reference to the PSI, especially when you're dealing with attorney's fees. And I would argue that in this situation, it is not that different. The state, this court has certified a conflict between the 12th District and the case here. In the 12th District, they call it an affirmative determination of the defendant's ability to pay. The judgment entry in Christman, the 12th District case, apparently contained explicit findings that Mr. Christman was able-bodied and capable of working once released from prison. There's no such findings in this case. In fact, we have information from the PSI, as was discussed earlier, that he was permanently disabled. And it was vague that he needed a hip replacement surgery. There was a lot of information contained in that PSI that is the only thing we have. If the trial court had made specific findings, like the Christman court, trial court allegedly did, to say that he can do this kind of job, he can do that kind of job based on what I read in the pre-sentence investigation, then perhaps I think the result would have been different, because I think the Second District would have said that's an appropriate affirmative finding or an explicit finding. We have nothing like that here. And so for that reason—
Counsel, what would be the consequences for your client not paying if he was so ordered?
The statute does, I believe the statute goes on to say that unlike other financial sanctions, I think there's limits on what a court, I believe there are other parts of 29-4151 that would prohibit sanctions against Mr. Taylor.
Because these are civil.
Correct.
Okay. He was not, other fines and fees were not imposed upon him, correct?
There was no fine. There was a $250 supervision fee also applied.
Okay, that's for his—
And court costs.
And costs, okay.
Yes.
Was there a hearing to determine whether he could pay the cost and the supervision fees?
No, and that is where I guess I make that there's a distinction. And the court, that was the appellate counsel in the Second District raised all the imposition of the financial sanctions as error. The Second District specifically held only the piece regarding the imposition of counsel fees of $130 was in violation of the statute. And that is where I make the distinction that I do believe that this section is different. You don't have a statute that says someone is not to pay a supervision fee. You do not have a statute that says the county shall pay court costs in all cases. The statute is clear, the losing party
pays court
costs.
What happens if he doesn't pay the supervision fee and he doesn't pay the costs? And you say there's no fine?
There's no fine.
Okay.
Those can be the basis, I believe those are the basis of a, those could be the basis of a violation. There is language now that failure to pay court costs, and I would believe the supervision fee, that community service can be performed toward that fee.
Okay, that's always been the case, but is he doing that?
As far as in terms of his current and his probation?
Yes.
I'm not sure where he's at in the payment of his financial sanctions.
Okay, but if he doesn't do, he doesn't pay, and he doesn't do community service, then what happens?
He can be violated. That becomes up to the court. In those cases, I think, for those sanctions, you can be violated, and he could be sent to prison for the violation, for violating the terms of his community control sanctions. And I don't believe that's the case for violation of not paying attorney's fees. But the question still remains, what findings need to be made on the record? I believe that the statute, because there is a presumption that would have to shift, I don't think, and as I think was discussed earlier, I don't believe it is unreasonable for an appellate court to have more of a record to determine whether or not a proper determination was made, either through a hearing or at least making findings on the record to justify the imposition that the presumption shifts and we're now going to impose all or part of the counsel fees.
Counsel, you're not advocating for some, as your opposing counsel said, talismanic language. If the trial court had simply referred to the PSI with more specificity, that would have satisfied the statute. Do you agree?
I believe, again, I think if looking at Christman, I think where you have specific findings even made in the judgment entry, not only at sentencing, I think that would have satisfied the Second District, and at least it would give a reviewing court something to say that it was considered. We're not going to say it was an abuse of discretion, and we're going to allow it, or we're going to say it was abuse of discretion, and we're going to disallow it. It gives something on the record that indicates that it was considered and specifically what was considered. If there are no other questions, I'll yield the balance of my time, and I would ask that the court affirm the decision of the Second District. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel.
I would like to answer Madam Chief Justice's question about the...
Hold the microphone closer, please.
Is that better? I would like to answer the question that Madam Chief Justice asked about what would the outcome be if he failed to pay any of the fees or costs assigned to him. Mr. Taylor would not be sent to prison if he failed to pay. It may elongate the time of his community control, but as we don't have debtors' prisons, he would not be sent to prison for failure to pay these fees. They can be then at the discretion of the court to be dismissed.
Is that the discretion of the court, whether or he's not going to be violated for not the attorney charge here, but he won't be violated for failure to pay his supervision fee?
No, Your Honor. I mean, excuse me. I think that would be up to the discretion of the court to violate or not violate.
No, the court doesn't violate somebody. That comes from the probation department.
Well, they can follow the recommendations of whether or not to send, you know, once he's violated, they can then send him to prison or continue along.
So he could. It could be conceived as or perceived as a violation.
As a violation, but he would not be sent to prison for that. It doesn't necessarily mean that his community control would be altered in any way. It just means that it might extend past. So he won't be sent to prison for failure to pay his supervision fee or his court-appointed counsel fees. It simply would...
And that's because that's not the practice of the judges in your jurisdiction?
Correct, Your Honor. And I think also the statute doesn't require it. I mean, they are not punitive sanctions. They are merely civil sanctions. And you can't send someone to prison for a civil violation.
Okay, so my question then is the supervision fee is regarded as a civil...
Yeah. I believe so, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
And with regard to whether or not the record supports the trial court's findings, the court-appointed counsel fees only amounted to $130. This case almost went to trial twice. The amount of fees that the trial attorney billed the court far, far exceeded that amount. So the fact that the trial court reduced the amount to such an extent does support the fact that they did make proper considerations. They thought about how he would be able to pay this back, his background, what he gets by disability, his employment potential. He only has to pay $130 of a much, much higher amount. That alone supports the fact that the trial court had to make a determination, can he pay the full amount, can he pay only a partial amount? And the trial court concluded he can only pay a partial amount, and a very small amount at that. The analysis in Chrisman is just like the analysis that we've applied in other different financial sanctions and fines. It allows the record to support the consideration of the trial court. It does not require talismanic language. It does not require explicit findings. It does not require the trial court to state specifically on the record, I considered XYZ. It just merely requires that the record in its entirety support that decision and that determination.
That wouldn't be your position if these were, if there was the potential for incarceration for failure to pay, correct?
For failure to pay counsel fees?
No. Forget counsel fees. If there was an order to pay fines, okay, in conjunction with a criminal case, and someone was on probation and they failed to make those payments.
So it would be a punitive sanction is
pardon me?
So that what you're referring to would be a punitive sanction?
Well, it's a fine. You're required to pay this fines are associated with the conviction.
Then yes, if it is for punitive reasons, I mean, I don't think you can be sent to prison for it, like I said, because we don't send people to prison. If you refuse to pay it, that's one thing. If you're unable to pay it, that's another entirely.
And you would agree, though, a hearing is necessary under those circumstances because the consequence could be incarceration.
For a punitive sanction, yes.
All right.
But court-appointed counsel fees are not punitive sanctions, and so prison is not
that.
A possibility. Unless there are any further questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marsha, we call a recess.